and watching the animated Beauty and the Beast with the kids in preparation for the live action one with the kids.
Awesome. I just saw the live action one yesterday.
How was it? Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it well enough. I don't have, like, deep nostalgia for the animated one, and I don't really remember it that well, so it was good enough for me.
Nice.
Yeah, I guess I'll watch it, but it's just because it's, like, pop culture thing you need to see to really just keep up with the world. But, yeah, I'm not too enthused, and I don't have kids, so.
Right.
All right, well, I guess let's have an episode here.
All right.
This is number 9, and so let's see... Scott and I, who we haven't talked to in a little while. Scott, hello.
Hello, and good afternoon to you. Good morning for me.
Yeah, that's right. Nice West East Coast. And then we have Travis Trudell, who's a new voice again. So, what's up, Travis?
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Glad to be here.
And we may or may not have Arik Devins. So, going to keep an eye out for him. I think he might be stranded in his apartment, so he was going to be on the show, but we're going to go on as if he's not going to make it. So, you guys ready? Or
Yeah, let's do this.
Or should we just wait 10 minutes so with no airtime, just waiting for Arik?
Could be some avant-garde podcasting.
That's right. Just dead air, guys.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the weather.
Podcasting with John Cage.
We do have a lot of stuff, big show. It always is after a big release month. And I think just in general, a lot happened. A lot on Filmstruck, too. So I guess let's get started with the June announcements. We had a pretty good month. We had 5 total releases, but really one of them was a box set. Another one was a double feature film. So I guess let's start with the upgrade / reissue / kind of not, in a way, Ugetsu. That was one we've kind of known was coming, and because we knew the restoration was out, I think it was touring around, so we had an idea about it. And this was an upgrade. It does have the 4K restoration. One weird thing is the booklet is that it looks like this is being ported over from the original DVD, but they're only including it with the Blu-ray. So do either of you guys have the DVD?
Yeah. I don't. I have the Masters of Cinema edition, but I might pick this up because that package with the booklet and everything is super nice, and I've long had my eye on it, kind of waiting for an upgrade.
And I can't remember. Yeah. Are you anti-Digipak, Scott? Or
no, I love Digipaks. Okay. That will definitely encourage me to buy. In fact, Blow Up, I wasn't going to buy at all, and then I found out it was a Digipak. I was like, well, that's some value for the money. I'll pick that up.
Me too. This bodes well for a Digipak if they're going to include the book. Travis, do you have the disc?
Yeah, I have the original Digipak. It's a beautiful edition. I love the they use that silvery type ink as well in it, so it makes it, you know, really stand out in comparison with some of the other discs. But I'm definitely looking forward for a Blu-ray upgrade of this. It's a beautiful, beautiful haunting film, so I'm definitely want to check it out and put it on the shelf.
Yeah, that's what I hear, and I think of this month the cover critics got a little. This was the one they targeted just because it's basically the same cover. I think the Criterion Forum people called it boring or unimaginative or something of that in that direction. But I kind of like the I don't own it, the DVD. I did see this coming someday, so I've been holding out. But I think it's a nice looking cover.
I've always liked it. Yeah, I didn't know what people's problem with it was.
Yeah, and it falls into the theme of the other Mizoguchi films that they've released. They all have that same kind of look to them, mm-hmm. between Sancho the Bailiff and Story of the Last Chrysanthemum.
Yeah, and I think the supplements are all, I think they're all ported from the DVD. It doesn't look like there's anything new, right, except for the restoration.
Yeah, I think it would say, like, exclusive to the Blu-ray, because it doesn't look like they're, like, reissuing the DVD at all. Well, I guess it has a different release date on it, so I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, they're reissuing the DVD without the book, which I think is...
Oh, I thought they already had. Okay.
Well, yeah, I guess we'll have to find out. It says, on the webpage, it says an essay by film critic Philip LaPate and 3 short stories that influenced Mizoguchi in making the film in Blu-ray... Blu-ray only, and then there is also a DVD available for pre-order, so I think that's what it means. So, yeah. You have to be Blu-ray to get books now, I guess, on Criterion.
I like it.
Me too.
Yeah, why not? It's not dual format, but it's the next best thing. And that is coming out in June 6th, on June 6th, and in June 6th. Why not? and then we have another another familiar filmmaker, Nicholas Ray, and this is June 13th, coming out with They Live by Night. So this one was teased in the newsletter, or the New Year's drawing. So I love this cover. I love the blue hue and the little single headlight. And, of course, I've seen this one, but it's been a while. And I think Nick Ray just is a perfect fit as far as classic directors and the Criterion. So are you guys have you guys seen this?
Same with you. It's been a while. I'd be interested to revisit it, though. And I do, as with you, love that cover. It's very pulpy, too.
Yes. Yeah, very hard-boiled.
Yeah, I haven't seen this film yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. The cover does, you know, once again, Criterion making the covers want you to see the film, so I appreciate that a lot.
And not always. some covers don't really help with that, but and I joke about the cover haters. I'm generally not one, but there are a couple that didn't really help. There are some interesting features. One thing I'm really looking forward to is the commentary with Eddie Mueller and then the actor Farley Granger. And I do like when they balance scholars and, you know, somebody from the production, whether it's an actor or director, because it's a nice balance of like film essay and reflections on the filmmaking. And there's a new video interview with Sarah Smith, or Imogen Sarah Smith, so that'll probably be kind of like a visual essay. And yeah, that's probably going to be a Scanavo edition, but who knows? Any thoughts about this one? Any thoughts about Nick Ray?
I mean, I love Nick Ray. I'm looking forward to that commentary as well. I think it's ported from a DVD, but I've never heard it, so it's new to me, as they say. And right. Eddie Mueller is one of those guys who isn't like easily intimidated by actors and directors and stuff. You know, sometimes with those kind of scholar and creative type balance. Commentaries, you get the scholar guy kind of intimidated and just kind of deferring to the actor at all costs, but I think he knows how to push people in the right way, and so it should be an interesting listen.
Yeah, absolutely. There are some commentaries where people are kind of in awe with the
right.
person. And,
it's kind of Chris Farley show-esque.
Right. Yeah. Remember that part? Yeah, and that would be me, I'll be honest. If I were doing not that Nick Ray's around, but if I were doing a commentary with Farley Granger, I'd probably be like, hey, what was it like?
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is... Sorry, Trent.
I'm interested to see the short piece with Oliver Stone. I want to see what he has anything to do with this movie. This seems to be so far away from the type of stories he tells that hearing his perspective or his thoughts about this should be kind of interesting as well.
Yeah, I guess maybe there's some Oliver Stone and film noir-esque films.
I think maybe Natural Born Killers, because this is also kind of a lovers on the run kind of story.
Yeah, that's a good
fit. There you go.
And that's a good fit. So, all right, that's a great release. I think we're in the beginning of a really nice month. So June 20th is the one I've been waiting for, and I'll just say it right now. This is cover of the month, maybe cover of the year so far. But this is the Marseille trilogy, which I've heard referred to as the Fanny trilogy, and it was actually they remade it. I think they kind of did like a Shogun Assassin thing once and truncated the movies into one and cut them together as a single movie called Fanny. Am I right on that?
That's what I've read.
Yeah. So this is Marcel Pagnol, his first foray into the collection, and that's this is the. From early French, the 1930s, which, as anybody that listens to Criterion Close Up knows that we're into. So we have Marius from 1931, Fanny from 32, and then César from 36. And yeah, the covers are by Italian, what was his name? Manuel Fior. And he's a comic book artist of some sort. And I found that when comic artists do these covers, no offense to the great illustrators, but I do really like the comic feel. I think that works for the discs. I'll start with you, Scott. Have you seen any Pagnol or the trilogy, or any thoughts on it?
I've not seen any of these films, but I'm, as with you, very much looking forward to them. The running times are a bit daunting. You know, I love 30s French cinema, but it can be a little on the slower moving side. So I'll be curious to see kind of how they play, especially the earlier ones. But it's just a great time period for cinema all around, and the transfer should really do them justice. 4K restorations and all of them. Was this the discs you picked up and then discovered that you didn't have any English subtitles with them?
No, good memory, actually.
Okay.
I was looking for them for the French series because we were right. going to include Marcel Pagnol in the third episode, which actually is going to be just Julien de Vivier, and we're kind of in the midst of that now. So I imported it from France, and it did have subtitles, but I accidentally ordered the DVD only, not the Blu-ray
right.
edition.
Okay.
And I think I bought it from eBay or something, from like French eBay. And then I saw the touring edition maybe a couple months later, and I was like, shit. So I it's still in its sealed plastic wrap. So it probably will stay that way. Anybody want to buy it?
Wow. I was going to say, now you've killed the resale value of it waiting till Criterion announced it.
Yeah.
But thanks for taking one for the team to get this
yeah.
into the collection. So we appreciate that.
An expensive investment for the team, so you're welcome. I take donations and Amazon wishlist purchases. So, Travis, are you is Pagnol on your radar at all?
I've seen Jean Le Fleuret and Manon of the Spring.
Right.
The Claude Berry ones, not the they've been a couple different versions of these, but I'm interested to see how it's kind of like almost like a Star Wars trilogy in terms of French cinema. Each one's directed by someone different, but it's all from the same author in the same place. So, and Pagnol only directed the third one, I think, Caesar,
mm-hmm.
With Corda directing the first one, and then Allegret doing the middle one, Fanny, which should be interesting because the only other one of note that I noticed that he's directed was Lady Chatterley's Lover. So hopefully it's nice and romantic.
Lawrence and Pagnol, why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I do kind of forget that Pagnol really was not in the film circle. He was a theatrical writer, really, but he did dabble in into directing later in his career, and of course then includes this set. So yeah, the extras are for a box set of this size, they're a little light. I think there's maybe probably going to be like one or two from each disc, probably similar to the Before trilogy, which I guess it's light on volume but packs a lot of substance into each one, so I'm hoping that'll be the case here. Of course, I'm really curious about the visual essay on Pagnol's poetic realism, since we're talking about that.
So, yeah, that's what I was look. That's what I'm looking forward to. Anytime there's a visual essay, I'm always excited for the release.
Yeah, for sure. And there is that more, tag.
The more,
who knows what'll come.
Yeah. So, and this one is a little personal to me. I actually haven't seen it. So people might be surprised because I've talked about it a number of times. I've just read so much about it, but because I left the discs in the shrink wrap, I won't be watching those anytime soon. All right. Well, then moving on to June 27th, we have. Well, the Criterion Geyer's... No, I'm sorry, not the favorite director, the second favorite director.
Runner-up. He's not the most directoriest director yet.
Right. And, of course, the most directoriest is Kubrick, which is very predictable, but that's okay. So we have Alfred Hitchcock, so early Hitchcock, and I'm not going to take credit, but I'll pat myself on the back for getting this right on the Blu-ray episode. I guess kind of getting it right. I predicted... early Hitchcock, because they have rights, I think, to this one and a few others, a few from the 30s. But instead we're getting, well, it's technically The Lodger, which is a 2K restoration, but there's also the 1927 Downhill, which is also a 2K restoration. So it's really a double feature. And it was teased just a couple weeks ago with a tweet. The conductor that did the score, I forget his name,
Neil Brand.
I think somebody tweeted about that, and Orchestra of St. Paul's. So, and I believe Jameson last week said it was not good. I can't remember. And I kind of have a feeling that we wouldn't get this if it did not have the name Hitchcock. Might have been forgotten, but either way, I think it's a great introduction to his career. So I guess this time I'll start with you, Travis. Do you have any thoughts about The Lodger or Downhill?
I'm excited to see these. I mean, you can only find them in those really horrible, like, public domain collections of early Hitchcock stuff. So to get this in a nice 2K restoration, I'm looking forward to it. I think the earliest Hitchcock that I've seen was Murder, It has an exclamation point at the end of it. So when I asked for that at the ticket booth, the guy was not impressed with me. But anyway, I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to this. Any Hitchcock is good Hitchcock, even early stuff where you can really see him developing his his style, and that's what I appreciate. And then to get two of them downhill, the other title which I discovered while doing a little research on it was When the Boy Leaves Home. So it probably is a very piece about what happens when you go off on your own and probably get taken advantage of in this world, from what I've read about it. So I'm looking forward to it. And then knowing that they're both with Ivor Novello, I've heard that he's quite the matinee idol, and be interested to see what he brings to the movies, because I know he didn't make the transition well into the sound era, because after sound film came along, that guy's name just disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happened to a lot of them.
And
good observation. I think that really is what's valuable about this piece, is that we do see the early maturation of his career. And even if these aren't up to snuff compared to even his 30s work, at least it's kind of it's the stepping stones. So, Scott, I doubt if you've seen this. Have you?
I have seen The Lodger. I haven't seen Downhill. But, I think The Lodger is a pretty sizable Hitchcock film. I think it's really not only important to his development, but kind of shows how quickly he latched onto a lot of the common themes and suspense techniques that he would expand upon throughout his career. It's a really, really strong film. It's a little compromised in terms of, I guess, studio interference and the fact that he was working with who was a major star at the time, even Novella. But moment to moment, scene to scene, there's a lot of really strong stuff in this film. It's really a thrilling watch.
Nice. I can't wait. I'm just looking at the My Criterion page. David Hollingsworth, who I've interacted on Twitter with him, I believe, but he said the Hitchcockian style started here. He calls it a chilling tale of a killer on the loose, that set the template for other killer thrillers. So yeah, I think it's probably important, not just as a Hitchcock film, but just a genre, like the thriller Hitchcockian genre.
Yeah, I couldn't claim enough expertise to say that for sure, but I'll just say that it's plenty thrilling in its own right.
And I like that there's going to be some Truffaut, of course, audio only, which we all know is from his Hitchcock Truffaut series. And there's another one with Bogdanovich. There's going to be a radio adaptation about it, which I'm not as keen on. I just don't watch those. Some interviews with scholars, historians. There's Stephen Jacobs about his architecture, his use of architecture, which I think is fun. I think any Hitchcock, the features, they're not really just about that film. They're about his entire style, and he has such a legendary body of work that there's lots to draw from. So I'm really looking forward to this one.
And I meant to say, I'm looking forward to the scores by Neil Brand. He did the scores for that Silent Ozu 3 crime drama set, and those are also kind of suspense thrillers, and I really liked his work there as well.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the one thing, I think I might have read this at Criterion Forum or elsewhere, that I think they said that the transfers aren't really living in a certain time, or a certain cut, so any scores they found historically, you couldn't really apply to the film. So, So it makes sense that they're doing new ones. And another thing to point out, this is a double feature, but it's a single disc, so that means it's a single price for. So it's $39.95 MSRP. So that means, if you get it on a sale, it's $20. If you get it, probably be $26 or $27 on Amazon.
And then, solid deal.
And that's a deal.
Yeah, for those people that count the minutes equals money, then they're going to be very happy with this.
I always say films equals money, and so yeah, two for the price of one, it's always good.
Yeah, that was a funny. We're referencing a conversation that we saw online that somebody was talking about how it was Black Girl, right? That they didn't think there were enough minutes to warrant the price. And then he had a brighter summer day. So yeah. Anyway, I don't think we agree with that argument.
No.
So the last release is also on the 27th, and this is an upgrade, but it's an upgrade of an out-of-print film, which is Sam Peckinpah's Straw Dogs. So this was teased just last week. I think pretty much everything was teased last week with tweets or somewhere. But this was seen on the on that wall, the wall of prints that gentleman tweeted by mistake, probably. And so that lends credence for those coming out. I think, of course, we've talked about Stalker, and we're expecting it any month now. But probably, well, I'll get to that more in a second. But Straw Dogs. So this one was out of print, but it wasn't. I don't believe it was a Studio Canal. So it's coming back. It was probably just the stock being out, and this was in the works. But it's a new transfer, 4K transfer. It looks like most everything else is carried over. No, I'm sorry. There are some new. There's a new interview, a couple of new conversations. There's Michael Scragow and Spottiswood, so that'll be interesting. He edited the film. And then film scholar Linda Williams talks about some of the controversy. Of course, it's not exactly it hasn't dated well, just with its theme and tones. So I'll start with you, Scott. Straw Dogs, what do you think?
I love this film through and through. I probably won't pick up the Blu-ray because I still have the Criterion DVD, and I've always been happy with it. But I think it's really exceptional and challenging, and in some ways conflicting film. You know, there's not kind of a through line that you can peg to, and I think that's some of the controversy that you alluded to. You know, there's so much that's unsettled about it, and I think purposely so. And yeah, I'm glad it's back in the collection. It certainly deserves to be there. And as I think studios kind of continue to undervalue their catalog, we'll start to see more and more of this. But good for Criterion for sticking with it and sticking by it.
Eric Arik is on, so I'll add him in a second. But we can just have him give a summation of his of the month. But Travis, do you have anything to say about Straw Dogs?
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy when anything comes back into the collection. I always like that. I had the original DVD as well, and I always remembered that it was the only DVD that had a sticker on the front that said limited edition. So I always thought that I always knew it was only going to be out for, you know, a certain amount of time. And so when it went out of print, I was happy to have it, you know, before, you know, having to lay down a whole bunch of money to get it. But this was a movie that I was introduced to, I think I was in high school at the time. I bumped into my English teacher at a local video store, and he said, "Well, do you have any suggestions?" And so I slid Reservoir Dogs over to him, and then he slid Straw Dogs over to me. So I thought it was very, very fitting transfer of information from one generation to another. But no, that movie stuck with me for years, just in terms of its theme and how brutal and just, you know, as usual with Peckinpah, you're dealing with what it means to be a man, and you know, seeing Hoffman go through that transformation. It's really is a strong, strong film. And now, anytime you're dealing with themes of rape or home invasion, there's going to be some aging issues when we come into our modern culture. But I think it holds up. It's not too crazy in terms of what message is still trying to convey.
Yeah, I think when I said dated, I meant that you couldn't make a movie like that today. But
it'd be tough.
Yeah, but I think
didn't they? Didn't they remake this movie?
That's true. They
yeah,
did.
Good point. yeah, no, I call it a visceral movie. I just remember it's been probably about 5-10 years since I saw it, and I haven't revisited. I will in a couple months, but I just remember being a little shell shocked after seeing it, because yeah, quite an ordeal. On that note, I have a surprise. Arik's here.
What?
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Arik.
Hey, guy. Hey,
man. We thought you were locked in your apartment. We were actually looking at your Twitter and seeing, making sure you had tweeted or put anything on Facebook. Didn't see anything. I was getting a little worried.
Yeah, no, I've got a really brutal head cold, and I've just been kind of locked in my house all weekend, but still wanted to do this.
Well, I'm glad to have you, head cold or otherwise, but We actually had already been recording, as you'll hear when you play this back, but we've gotten through the June releases, so just see if you want to make any comments. We have, you probably already know, but we hopefully pull it back up. Ugetsu, They Live by Night, the Marseille Trilogy, The Lodger, and Straw Dogs. So do you have any thoughts on the month?
Yeah, absolutely. Not a lot, though. I haven't seen any of these movies, which is not uncommon for me. With Criterion, I'm watching through the collection for the first time, unlike I think all of you. But I'm very, very excited about this particular month. There's a couple things triggering that. Number one, it's nice to see them doing upgrades, always.
Yes.
And we get two, and we get one that's a rescued out-of-print title. Not one that I was particularly excited about them bringing back, to be honest with you. I've pretty much only ever heard things that makes me think I won't like that movie, although I did just hear an interesting defense of it. So, but I'm still excited just the idea that they are able to bring those discs back. And I think I've heard that means that it's likely that they're going to be bringing back the three Hitchcock films that are out of print, mm-hmm. Which is very exciting. Speaking of Hitchcock, though, that Lodger is probably the one I'm most excited about. I haven't seen any of the Hitchcock Silent Nine, but I've always wanted to, and we get two of them, and that cover is absolutely, to my mind, incredible. So it's an exciting month. Nicholas Ray is great. That Marseille trilogy is supposed to be great. I think it's great. It's this year has been pretty much nothing but like incredible months from Criterion. So they're just continuing it.
Yeah, May was just phenomenal, and this is just right in that with that same momentum. Yeah, we talked about The Lodger, but we forgot to mention the cover art. And I'm with you. My favorite of the month is Marseille trilogy. I just love the little illustrations for each film. But The Lodger's a pretty close second, and then They Live by Night is beautiful as well. So
it's strong all around. There's really not a bad cover. Straw Dogs is probably the worst one, but that was true before anyway.
That was. And so since we didn't get to it, so Arik, hello. Actually, this is your first time on one of my podcasts because. Or the one that I've led, because I noticed that you weren't on my Skype. But you didn't get a chance to introduce yourself, but Arik is from Criterion Cast, and you're doing this new jazz podcast, which is really, really awesome. In fact, we didn't really introduce Scott or Travis either, so let's just mess with things.
This is why I'm here.
Yeah, we were waiting for you, Arik. So do you want to talk about that real quick, Arik?
Oh, sure. My podcast, it's called A History of Jazz, and you can find it at ahistoryofjazz.com or Jazz History Pod on Twitter or in iTunes or Overcast or wherever. It's if you get in now, you're only two episodes to catch up on because it's pretty new. But I'm doing a history of jazz starting. I started in 1619, which was probably an unusual starting point for most folks that tuned in. But right now we're in 1917, the first year of jazz recording, and we're just kind of going episode by episode. There's kind of broad episodes and focused episodes and different things to talk about. There's also going to be guests coming up at some point and different things. I'm having a lot of fun with it, but yeah, just kind of trying to teach and listen to a lot of music. So the next episode that's coming out will be everything else from 1917 that we haven't covered to kind of close out that year, and then we'll move on to 1918. It's been really, really rewarding, the response so far, and I'm really enjoying doing it.
Yeah, talk about ambitious. I think it's excellent. It really is. It's a nice. It's not just about the music, but it's about the culture and the history. It's a really good listen. So we'll put that in the show notes, and I recommend everybody check it out.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you for doing it. I know it was a lot of work. Scott, we just basically said hello, but you want to just say what you're about?
Yeah, I mean, I'm over at Criterion Cast and Battleship Retention. I haven't done much at either recently. Well, I have picked up at both. I did some Blu-ray reviews at Criterion Cast for Twilight's Last Gleaming and something else that is now slipping my mind. And then just today at Battleship Retention, I posted a review of Terrence Malick's new movie, Song to Song, which I'm really excited about. I think it's the best movie I've seen this year and his best in, I think, quite a while. I was really into that one. That's what I've been up to.
Yeah, cool. Probably everybody listening to this podcast knows these all three of our voices. So the voice they don't know is Travis. So Travis, what are you about?
I'm about long walks on the beach. I haven't been doing a lot social media wise. I kind of keep quiet except when I'm moderating the Gyre, the Criterion Gyre, which is a Facebook group that I kind of haunt and manage. But first, before I go any further, Arik, the History of Jazz podcast has been absolutely fantastic. The level of detail and history that you're putting forth in each episode has been phenomenal. So I have to applaud you on that. I've really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you. That's incredibly nice. Thank you.
Oh, you can see the amount of work. I mean, I know you're not supposed to let them see you sweat, but you can feel the amount of work that you've put into, but it doesn't come across when you're talking about something you obviously have a great passion for. So aces, man, that's good stuff. Otherwise than that, I'm just, watching a lot of movies, raising two kids, and I do a lot of lighting for television and film, so I've been starting to gear up for our spring summer season of movies in the Massachusetts area. So that's what I've been up to.
Yeah, very cool. Well, glad to have you all, and thank you for joining, and sorry for waiting for Arik to introduce you. Let's get back to the content. So we talked about the June releases, and one thing is there was no Stalker announcement. I think a lot of us expected that by now. I actually saw some people a little upset that it wasn't announced, and I put down, is this the new Mulholland Drive, because it's everybody knows it's coming or thinks it's coming, but they keep waiting. And you could insert any Wes Anderson film. In fact, I'm sure The Grand Budapest is going to be the new Mulholland Drive or the new Stalker any month now. So, and then Criterion also tweeted about Mirror, so you do wonder about more Tarkovsky coming. But do you guys get annoyed by people whining that something didn't get announced, or is that just me?
I just think that, the longer it takes them to put something out, the better it's going to be. It's like wine. The longer it ages, the better it'll come. I mean, maybe they are waiting for them to finish up the Mirror as well. Maybe they're going to do like a Chimes Immortal Story back-to-back, spine number to spine number release of them, which would be nice.
You know, I think that whenever there's a company or whatever that does things mostly in secret, we tend to construct these like elaborate plot theories about why they're doing what they're doing. And I mean, I would almost guarantee you that every single decision Criterion makes is like, oh, we can get this done this month. Oh, we can get that movie out. Oh, this is ready. Oh, that's late. So, I'm sure that they will be releasing these movies, and they'll do them when they're ready and not until then. And we'll, they shuffle their schedules and we'll, it is what it is. I do find it amusing the people who are just losing their minds, because the minute that those releases come out, like you said, there's something else. But
exactly, yeah.
But it'll be what it'll be.
And that's a great point. There is an invisible wall between Criterion and us, and I think Criterion, even though they tease things, they make it even more invisible, and that's what makes stuff like this fun, at least for me, is trying to figure out what's coming and then celebrate it, which we just did. So, that does bring out sometimes the worst in people, but worst or best, because having expectations of something you really enjoy is not a terrible thing either. So yeah, when do you think Budapest Hotel is coming out? Since that's probably the next one, maybe later this year.
Oh, what year did that come out theatrically? Because they're usually, what, 5-ish years after or something like that?
It kind of varies, but it came out in 2014, so I would say this year would have been the earliest I would have expected it, so we'll see.
Yeah, we haven't seen teases, so I think that's one they would tease. They did for Moonrise Kingdom, and I think for Life Aquatic, I think.
They've been putting Wes Anderson's out somewhere in the hundreds, like 700, 600, so maybe they're going to wait for 900 to put that to continue their trend.
Or maybe they'll wait for 1,000.
Moonrise Kingdom came out last year, right?
Yeah.
So that was 4 years. So
maybe next year. We'll see. Yeah. If it's next year, there'll be a fever pitch of people. So, all right, well, let's move on. And so I'm going to talk about some stuff on Filmstruck. Not usually we do have like a Filmstruck segment, but this time it was such a massive, I called it a dump, but it's really, that word has some connotations I don't think we want to associate. We had a whole bunch of Ingmar Bergman films released on Filmstruck or dumped on Filmstruck. So there was a whole bunch in the Criterion Channel, and then there's a big segment, Master Ingmar Bergman, in the main channel as well. And I figure those will probably expire at some point. And so it was a whole bunch of films. I'm not going to list them all, because a lot of them, like we said with the Ozu last week, people might call lesser, but it's not really lesser, it's just more less well-known. But then there was also what made a lot of people excited is there were Hour of the Wolf and Passion of Anna, which I know we talked about that on Twitter, Scott, along with Shame, which I'm pretty sure was already there. That was That was an MGM box set, and yeah, there was pretty loose really no association between the three. I think, as you put it, that was just all they could get. And I haven't seen Passion of Anna, so but I haven't heard great things. So let's start with let's see my alphabet. Oh yeah, no, Arik's here. So let's start with Arik. What do you think about these films or Bergman or
Bergman?
Well, Bergman is, if not my favorite director, certainly one of my top few. I'm obsessed, but I actually have not seen many of these films that are uploaded. But the one that I have is actually probably the least well known of these, which is the documentary he made for local television on the island he lived on, Faro document. Now, what made me a little bit sad is that, listen, I don't want to complain about a huge new selection of Bergman films to check out, but I was really hoping that maybe they had the first one he made. So Faro Document 1979 is the sequel to a documentary he made in 1969, mm-hmm. which does not seem to either exist anymore or at least be in the hands of Criterion. So I was a little bit sad that that wasn't up there. But yeah, there's a bunch of films here from the Bergman Eclipse set, and there's some other stuff. They're all worth checking out, and it's just exciting to see them continue to move forward. There is some stuff here, yeah, that I suspect will be out on Blu-ray in the next, you know, insert number of months, years, decades here. But as a Bergmanophile, much like Scott, I know, I'm very, very excited just anytime there's more of his work available.
Yeah, and Scott, I know you have something to say.
Yeah, I mean, anytime there's Bergman, I feel the need to elevate him and chime in and always be pushing him as, to me, the greatest film director of all time. And I think these are, you know, they're not kind of the top line in many ways. I think even The Silence, which is kind of part of that Faith trilogy, is maybe I like it a lot, but it's maybe the least noteworthy of those three. But as I have said in our Bergman-focused episodes, you know, he has these various tiers where it's like these transcendent films and then these like extraordinary films and then these regular masterpieces. And then there's a whole other layer of films that are just really, really good. Mm-hmm. So films like Thirst and Secrets of Women and A Lesson in Love, these are all like really strong, interesting films that I think are really worth watching. A Lesson in Love, especially if people, for some reason, if they still don't recognize how well Bergman can do comedy, this is a hilarious film, which Eva Dahlbeck and Gunnar Bernstein just go to town with in kind of a screwball comedy almost kind of tone. So those are the films I've seen. Well, I haven't seen Scenes from a Marriage, which I'm glad that they put the individual episodes up for the TV version, because those were never on Hulu. They only ever had the feature film version. So I'm glad that that is now more widely available. I actually just rewatched that over the last couple of months, and man, it really holds up great. But I'm definitely very keen on checking out The Right. It's the only film of his from the 1960s that I haven't seen. And Dreams is one of two from the 50s that I haven't seen. So this is a really good way to kind of fill in those holes. And yeah, I mean, I hope they'll be putting out editions of like Hour of the Wolf and even Passion of Anna, which I don't love, but some people are really into, and hope to give that another try. But in the meantime, before we can get proper editions of these, it's nice to have them all at least available.
Yeah, did either of you guys watch these to see if they have the Criterion logo? The MGM ones.
I scrolled through them, and they all have the Criterion brand. Everything on that Bergman page has the Criterion branding on it somewhere. So it's that's pretty hopeful.
Mm-hmm. And a good point about the early work, Scott. So we have most of the Eclipse viewer, or the Eclipse viewer, you're welcome, David and Trevor. The Eclipse set, I think there were missing to Joy, and I think Portugal, maybe another one. But then those three from the 50s, Secrets of Women, A Lesson in Love, and Dreams, I haven't seen any of those, but I'm really looking forward to, especially after your description, because this really is right before he really broke out with Smiles of a Summer Night and all the summer movies, and then, of course, his Seventh Seal and Wild Strawberries, and the rest is history. So yeah, this is great. And I haven't seen as many as you, Scott, and I haven't seen many of these. And in fact, I like that they added extras too to the a lot of the Blu-rays. So like Fanny and Alexander, I believe has all the extras now, and I believe Scenes from a Marriage has them from the DVD. So Travis, I don't think I kicked it to you. What do you think about Bergman in these films?
I'm excited. Like, anytime you have almost a complete collection of a director's work is amazing, because then you can really get an idea, you know, a full trajectory of where they started from and where they ended in their career. But, you know, I haven't seen as many as everyone else. I mean, I've seen the major ones. Some of his earlier films I haven't checked out. But I'm interested in, there was one called The Devil's Eye that looked really, really interesting. Looked like something off the beaten path for what he was usually doing. It almost looked, in its description and in the pictures I saw, it almost looked kind of like a Night of the Hunter-esque type priest gone bad kind of idea. So I'd be interested to dig into that one. But I was wondering if maybe Scott or Ark, if either of you seen the From the Life of Marionettes. I was reading somewhere that it's like a Scenes from a Marriage, like kind of like follow-up, like a revisit. Is that true, or...?
I don't personally see the connection. It's a rough go. I mean, it's definitely Bergman trying to kind of get with the times of the late 70s, early 80s, and it's very, very tough to watch. It's very kind of harsh on its characters and its environment, and it does have a scene set in a strip club, which if you want to see Bergman do a scene set in a strip club, that's unusual, I guess. But it is...
Who wouldn't?
It is on the lowest... Yeah, right. It is on the lowest tier to me for Bergman. It's not a very strong film and kind of admirable in his effort to kind of keep with the times, but a little misplaced. I did want to say, though, that The Devil's Eye is awesome. It's a little bit more comedic than I think you made it out to be, but especially if you are as fond of B.B. Anderson as I am, she's outstanding in the film.
Cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it's easy to elevate Bergman. I think he's easily one of my favorite directors as well, but there are... Especially his early work, there are holes. Not all of them are perfect. I remember I didn't like Crisis all that much, but more, you know, I think 9 out of 10 I love, or at least extremely like. And Scott, I'm pretty sure you've written about Bergman on Criterion Cast, so I'll find a few links and put them in the show notes if you guys want to read more about Bergman's lesser films.
You can also check out our 3-part Summers with Bergman series from last summer.
That's right.
Yeah, all the summer films.
Terrific. Yeah. Well, let's move on. We had a new release this week, which was Canoa, a Shameful Memory. Was that the subtopic, a subtitle? I believe it was.
Yes. Yeah.
So we like to talk about the new releases. We still have a backlog. We still haven't talked about 45 Years or Before Midnight, and that's I'm going to blame my wife. That's because we're waiting for that date night to watch 45 Years, and it hasn't happened yet. But I did watch Canoa this week, and Arik, I noticed you reviewed it on Criterion Cast. I actually didn't read it because I didn't want to spoil my own thoughts. But I went in fresh, so I'm still kind of parsing through this. But what did you think of Canoa?
I thought it was absolutely incredible. I was totally unprepared and unexpected as well. I knew nothing about it going in, and I also don't know a huge amount about the history of Mexican cinema. So this was a really great way to get some glimpse into a certain era of that. But I was blown away. So it's a film based on a true story and they tell you all the details of the story in the first minute. So there's not really any way mm-hmm. to spoil it. But it's about these university workers from a nearby town that go to a small village to climb a mountain, and when they get there, it's raining, so they need to get shelter for the night, and during the night a mob of villagers come to the house they're staying at and lynch them. The incident that the film is documenting took place, I think, 2 weeks before the 1968 Mexico City student massacre. Mm-hmm. And the film was made 8 years later in a way to comment on both of those things. And it is just obviously the subject matter is quite heavy, but it's the way the film is made and structured that I think was so intensely interesting to me, because it's just it's a format that I haven't really ever seen before. It's like a sort of a documentary, sort of a thriller, sort of a horror film. There's a lot of fourth wall breaking. There's a lot of like mm-hmm. unconventional narrative structure. There's a lot of interesting approaches to cinema that I hadn't necessarily seen before. I was absolutely blown away by it. And then in terms of the disc, I thought that the special features helped with that a lot as well, because there's like an hour-long conversation between the director and Alfonso Cuarón that I thought was extremely enlightening. I don't know if you watched that one, but I highly recommend it. What did you think?
Well, I'm still digesting it. I loved it. Those little narrative techniques that you mentioned, especially like in the first hour, they were it. And I watched it on a weekday after a lot of busy days at work, so it was a tough week for me to really to ingest it. But it was something. And that last hour, I'm not gonna get into how they handle that, but it's again, I use the word visceral for Straw Dogs. I'd say that's it's just as much, if not maybe even more visceral for this. I would say it's easy to get spoiled, and actually even the title I guess kind of spoils it a little bit, but try to keep your expectations to a minimum. I thought it really did pack a punch, and but I think it really deserves rewatching. I don't know how many times you watched it, Arik, but I kind of felt like I needed to go back and watch that first hour, having seen the second. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. It's there's so much to see, and there's so much that's being done, like I said, in an unconventional way, so that you're kind of like, and also I think the first time you watch it through, you're kind of always waiting. There's that tenseness to it, because it is that thriller aspect. So I think, yeah, going back and having a much more casual relationship to the timeline, because you know what, when, because the whole movie's basically at that point about when, right? Exactly. You know what.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I think I will watch it many more times beyond the times I watched it for the review. It was really a shock to me. I you just never know. I mean, I think I said in my review, this is it, to some degree, it's why we do this, right? Like, you just never know when you're going to pop that disc in and find something completely unexpected that captures your imagination.
Yeah, and they tend to just surprise us so often. I think the last great one was The Executioner for me. And by the way, the massacre you mentioned is the Tataloco massacre, which I just pulled up the Wikipedia, and they killed an estimated 30 to 300. That's a pretty wide range of people.
The government and the media, I mean, it was all super covered up, and they didn't even acknowledge it. It's one of the biggest tragedies in Mexican history. It's pretty crazy.
But because of that, because that was sort of it was commenting on that, but not directly. It kind of reminded me of a Costa Gavras film, kind of like Z, where you're really commenting on political realities, harsh realities that are going on right at that moment. So that was something. So Scott,
it's one point, quick point. Sorry, sure. On that. It's funny that you mentioned Costa Gavras, because in the conversation between Felipe Casals and Cuarón. Cuarón brings that up, and Casals specifically says that while he does feel like he was working in the same sort of political space, that he was specifically not trying to make a Costa Gavras type film thematically or structurally, which I think you'd agree he didn't.
No,
But I just find it quite funny that he was like, yeah, I didn't want to make a film like that.
And like, I think that's to its credit, too. I think that if he had done a copycat Costa Gavras, I think it would. I think that it's just easy to categorize the two because they're political thrillers. There, and of course, Costa Gavras did a lot of South America, so it's in not technically in the neighborhood, but it's South of America. So, Scott or Travis, did you see Canoa or any thoughts?
I have not seen it, but I am very much looking forward to it.
I'll echo that sentiment. I have not seen it as well, but I do look forward to anything new from that part of the world, especially right now.
Yeah, so there's an intro from Guillermo del Toro, and then Arik referenced the conversation between Cuarón and the director. I forget the director's name off the top of my head. But I didn't watch all of that because it was longer and I just didn't have the time. I had to do taxes of all things. So taxes took precedent over Cuarón. But what I watched was interesting. I didn't get to the Casa Gavras part. So definitely check that out. Coming up next week, or this week, is Being There and Multiple Maniacs are both coming out this Tuesday. So a pretty big week. And then Blow Up comes out the week after. And I'm not sure if I'm going to do a show next week yet. We'll see. And then there's a little bit of a layoff. Oh, and by the way, Blow Up, as we mentioned, it has a beautiful digipack that's people are getting the review copies and sharing, and it looks really nice. And then we're getting a little break and then some Demi films. So that'll be nice for me to catch up on my criterions. All right, well, let me just breeze through some news pieces. Unless you guys stop me if you want to dig into any of these, but otherwise I'll just kind of run through them. So we had we talked about Lost in America last week with the drawing. So Albert Brooks this week tweeted that it was coming to Criterion. So it seems to happen all the time. So yeah, I'd say it's coming. My guess is next month. And again, like I said, just cut me off if you want to say anything. So otherwise, I'll just move on. We also have Le Samurai is now listed as buy on Amazon, and I think it was Mark that pointed out, he calls this the, quote, buy on Amazon hell. So that basically means out of print, but not out of print. It just means the prices are going to get inflated. This was on the iTunes channel, so I think we... It's been a while, though, but I think we should get a Blu-ray someday. It's not a part of the Studio Canal collection. Also, there was a Denis Villeneuve Phantom page, so that is interesting. People might know him from the Oscar-nominated Arrival this year. And but there's speculation this might be his early film, one of his early films, and which aren't as popular. And then maybe Enemy, which was brought up.
And I don't know, Enemy's Lionsgate, so I don't know if that'll happen.
Ah, thanks, Travis.
Yeah, Enemy and Sicario, Lionsgate. I was thinking maybe Incendies. We seem to have a healthy relationship with Sony now, or Criterion does, so. And Incendies is a fantastic film, but then again, Prisoners is also by Warner Brothers, and they've been working a lot with Warner Brothers lately too, so it could be either of those would be fantastic.
Yeah, there were some references to Polytechnique, some people thought that, and I don't know what studio has that. Prisoners, I would think, would be less likely. I just think that that's something the studio probably would try to keep selling. I know that one hit the bargain bin a few times for Black Friday. So, and let me just get the last piece of news. Is it really not Criterion specific, but looks like Orson Welles' The Other Side of the Wind is finally going to be released after about, I don't know, 2-3 years of having since the Indiegogo campaign, which I did donate to, and I'm pleased that my money's going to turn into something. But it's going to come out on Netflix, and then but the rewards are going to finally go out for Indiegogo. So. All right, so I just ran through a bunch of news things. So, Arik, do you have any thoughts on any of those?
I thought you did a good job.
Thank you.
I'm really hoping that Le Samurai is, we're just waiting for the inevitable hopeful Blu-ray upgrade. That is such a wonderful movie. Melville is one of my favorites as well, and I hope it's not. This isn't the fast track to permanent out of print, but we'll see. Mm-hmm.
It's a very cool movie, too. Really exudes that the coolness of Odeon. So, Scott, any thoughts on any of those?
The Other Side of the Wind. I'll believe it when I see it, but I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, that's one you want to pinch yourself when it finally gets here. But I think it'll happen, finally. I think, wasn't his daughter the obstacle with negotiations? Or we probably don't know, but it seemed that way. So.
Yeah, I lost track.
A lot of obstacles. All right, well, let's get into short takes. So, Arik, do you want to start us? This is just a Criterion we've seen somewhat recently. So,
yeah. So, mine is Les Blank's Burden of Dreams, which I saw like maybe a month ago now, I think. And I'm a pretty big Blank fan. The box set of his short films is one of my treasured Criterions. I also really enjoy, I'm probably one of the few that really enjoy the Leon Russell doc, A Poem as a Naked Person, but I'm just a big fan of his work. I know that we are getting this one, Burden of Dreams, on Blu-ray at some point. Like, that was confirmed to me by his son, but at some point I was like, you know what, it's on my shelf there, and I gotta pop it in. And I really enjoyed it, and partially, the reason I really wanted to pop it in is that I have a crazy fascination with Werner Herzog. And it's funny because I actually have not seen virtually any of Herzog's film. I've seen a couple, but I haven't seen, like, I've never seen Fitzcarraldo, the film that this is a documentary of the making of.
Oh, wow.
But it's because what I'm fascinated by is Herzog himself. He is a more interesting character to me than any of his movies could be. To get an entire movie of him in that era, you know, yelling at people, being the craziest person. I mean, you know, with Klaus Kinski as well, and we'll get to that when we get to my what do you call them? The piece of flair at the end of this.
Yeah, yeah.
What surprised me about this film is that it doesn't feel as less blanky as most of the other less blank films I've seen. Like, it feels much more straightforward. It doesn't like venture into you know, pointless making of, you know, EPK or whatever they call those things on mainstream discs. But it's much more straightforward. And I really like that Blank said the reason for that was that Herzog was just a lot more interesting than Leon Russell, and so he didn't get as distracted. He didn't feel the need.
Mm-hmm.
Just a real solid, very fun film. And I mean, how many times are you going to get to watch a man try to pull a ship over a mountain? I mean, that's, you know.
I think you need to see Fitzcarraldo after. I mean, you practically have already, yeah. but I think you'd enjoy it. This is a phenomenal documentary, and I really hope we get the Blu-ray soon. Did any of you guys happen to listen to our Alex Cox episode, the close-up one, a year or two ago?
Yep.
He talked about Herzog and Kinski, and he had an interesting take, basically that Herzog was the crazier one, but since he is alive and, you know, can do interviews and have documentaries or write things, that he's changed the narrative to make it look like Kinski was the worst. I think it's probably a little somewhere in between. It was quite a surprising take, but I think they're both nuts.
Herzog, the shaper of reality. You know, his personality seems to almost overreach his films that he's made at this point in his career. So it's pretty pretty fantastic that he's the one writing the history of Kinski.
Well, I think they're both crazy in their own ways.
They are. And he's very much a director, and I think he directs his own image, and he has fun with it, too. I know he was on Parks and Rec, and he's done some things here and there. So, all right, Scott.
Well, I can tell you that I briefly met him a few months ago, and he was very, very nice to me.
Cool. I wish I would love to meet him someday. I'm sure that was amazing. All right, Scott, what's your short take?
I've picked up McCabe and Mrs. Miller in the recent flash sale. It was kind of my third pick to get over the infamous free shipping hub, and so it wasn't one I was, for whatever reason, just particularly interested in revisiting. I had seen it, you know, a few times before, and I was like, well, I'll want it on Blu-ray someday. But sure enough, I ended up popping it in one late night because it felt right, and I just fell in love with it all over again. I forgot just how strong and interesting and strange a film it is. And I mentioned this on Twitter, but it's also, I mean, maybe the best transfer of a 1970s film I've seen on Blu-ray. There's no attempt at all to make it look like a modern film. It's really mm-hmm. grainy, and yeah. there's no kind of like deep blacks to the image. It's all kind of like muddy and brown and dirty and gross. And so that alone too. I mean, I've been looking forward to seeing a Blu-ray, but I kind of wondered if they could really do justice to just how odd a looking film it is, but they really did an exceptional job. And yeah, I mean, like I said, it's still as great a film as ever. And I'm looking forward to diving into the supplements as well. I'm really glad I ended up picking it up.
Yeah, somebody online was complaining about the transfer, that they didn't clean it up enough. And this is kind of funny. When we got our 4K TV and got the we had somebody out here to install it, I was just looking for any DVD to try. And
right.
And this was the one closest to the TV. And so I put it on, and the guy thought that it wasn't working.
Oh, yeah. This has been one of those discussions that's been happening like since Blu-ray came out, and I've always been firmly on the side of more grain, more damage,
yeah.
more muddy blacks and all that. Just like make it look like, I mean, I watch a lot of movies on 35 here in LA. It's very easy to do, and you realize just how kind of distorted and cleaned up most Blu-rays are. And so when you see something like this, that's really just lets it be nasty. It's nice.
And that's how I think Altman intended it too. This is not meant to be an immaculate, like, you know, you can clean up a Bergman film, make those blacks and whites pop, but yeah, don't bother with this Western tale. All right, Travis.
Oh, cool. Vilmos Zsigmond on McCabe and Mrs. Miller, you know, he did that flashing technique, which got rid of all the blacks and made them muddy. So I remember I heard a story about halfway through the movie when they were watching Rushes. He just turned to Altman and was just like, maybe we should stop doing this. And he's like, no, we're committing. Let's just get it done. We got to finish it now.
It's a great film.
It's fantastic. But my short take is I was going to talk about Late Spring, but you guys did such a stellar job of dissecting that film in your Criterion close-up last week that I decided I'd pick The House is Black, which is a 1963 short documentary. You can find it on the Filmstruck channel in the World Cinema Iran section.
Cinema Passport is what they call
Cinema
it.
Cinema Passport. Yeah. There we go. It's directed by Farooq Farrokhzad, and it's a short documentary, very lyrical, very poetic exploration of a leper colony in Iran. And it's it has a lot of striking similarities in terms of its editing style and its visuals with night and fog. Not as heavy of content, of course, but it was really, really surprising to me. I kind of just clicked onto that section and picked, I always seem to watch movies in chronological order. So I start at the oldest and work my way up to the newest. And that was the oldest film on that section. And it was absolutely beautiful as well as just haunting. Just lots of images of how horrible leprosy can be, and compare, contrasted sometimes or juxtaposed with scripture or sections of both the Quran and the Bible being read by different people. It's really beautiful, and I highly recommend it. It was very eye-opening, and it really set a great tone for me to explore that section of Filmstruck.
Yeah, I think Iranian cinema is just amazing, and but we tend to just, I guess, truncate it into Farhadi, Kiarostami, of course, and Panahi, maybe to a lesser extent, but, not to a lesser extent. He's pretty big. I like those Cinema Passport things they do on Filmstruck where they organize things. I think that one, if I remember, has films from each one of those, the big three I told
yes.
you about. But something like that would be a nice undiscovered gem. I'd love to see more from Iran.
And the director of the film, it's the only movie she made. She was a poet, a feminist poet, back in the 60s in Iran, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
And she died in a car accident. She crashed into a stone wall avoiding a bus of school children.
Wow.
And, it's a very sad because the potential of what she could have done as a filmmaker was, cut super short, which, adds to the weight of the film itself.
Yeah, that's tragic. My wife teaches poetry. I'll have to ask her if she knows Farrokhzad, was that it?
Farrokhzad.
Well, we're already starting to run long, so I'll keep my short take very short, but I actually didn't have time. Just had a lot of stuff going on this week, and I do one of these pretty much every week. So I watched not quite a short film, but not quite a feature either, from Harold Lloyd, For Heaven's Sake, and I loved it. I think we talk about the comedian silent filmmakers, and it's usually Chaplin, Keaton, and of course Lloyd are the big ones. Although I think that's unfair. I think there were many. Max Sennett was a good one. There's plenty others too. But this one was directed by George Seaton, who is pretty. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a different one. that's the later version. I don't know who directed this, but it's Harold Lloyd at his best. It's one of my favorite Harold Lloyds, actually, and that's pretty high praise because I love Speedy and The Freshman and Safety Last as well. But I think of those three, as far as just pure laughs, I think I like Lloyd the best. I just think he's the funniest, whereas I think Chaplin and Keaton, I think Chaplin was the better filmmaker, and Keaton was the better, I guess, at visual gags, although Lloyd was no slouch as well. But this was about a guy who's, of course, it's a typical story, a guy trying to win a girl, and this is a millionaire who is trying to give to an orphanage, or not an orphanage, what do they call it, a mission home for homeless people. So he gets in league with them, and hijinks follow, as you can imagine. But yeah, that was on Filmstruck as well. That's not a Criterion release. I think it's probably, it's long enough. I think it was about 50 minutes, or maybe a little longer. So it's in the running time to where I think it could be on a disc, or maybe as an extra film, but yeah, definitely check it out if you like some Lloyd. So, all right, well, let's turn it over to Filmstruck. So, this week, we didn't have a whole lot on the main channel. We already talked about the Bergman thing, which was a big deal, and that kind of made shockwaves around our little community. There's also, and it might have been the week before, but there was a little curated section by Jean-Jacques Benet, And I had not seen any of those. I think Betty Blue I might have seen a long time ago, but I'll just throw it out to all of you. Any of you guys familiar with or fans of Benet?
I'd never heard of him, but these sound really, really amazing. I love 80s kind of psychosexual thrillers, and these sound pretty awesome.
Yeah, if you're going to start out anywhere with him, Diva is an amazing film. I highly recommend it. That was one I saw earlier, and I think a buddy of mine in film school had it, and it was, you know, I think we were all watching the films of Jean-Luc, the director of The Professional and The Fifth Element, Luc Besson. Jean-Luc. but yeah, we were watching like Luc Besson action movies, and then someone popped this in, and it has that same it has that frantic feel of a chase movie. You know, someone has a MacGuffin somewhere and everyone has to find it. But it's about legally taping an opera singer, and it's absolutely fantastic. It's a really cool film.
Cool. And there's I do like the Filmstruck does this because he's probably not going to make to the main disc line, and actually didn't even make it into the channel, so this might be a short-term thing. But I probably won't get to any of them just because I have a lot of competition as far as films to watch. But yeah, and I mentioned, I did hear Diva is excellent, and also Betty Blue is supposed to be good. That has the girl from Night on Earth, the French segment. I forget the actress's name. Dahl, is it? Yeah, I think so. Beatrice Dahl. Arik, are you familiar with them, or is it crickets for you?
No, not familiar with them, although that description does sound great.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can check them out some. And yet, there was nothing else new on the main channel, which is weird. They kind of recycled some things from that had already been there. So we'll just move on, because we had a big week in the Criterion channel. Not just the Bergman, but just in general, there were some neat little additions. There was a list of about memory on film, and this was just about a handful of films: Rashomon, Wild Strawberries, Hiroshima Mon Amour, Sans Soleil, The Mirror, Three Colors Blue, and In the Mood for Love. So yeah, that's a good collection. There's probably dozens more you could pull from the collection about memory. That's a good subject to be mined. So Arik, I know you didn't want to talk about this, but have you warmed at all to Filmstruck?
No, it's not. It's not that I'm not warm. It's just that I don't currently have a subscription, so it's hard to have your opinions, you know, change when you're not using it. You know, gotcha. For me, as a completionist, all of these movies are calling me on my shelves, and so I just said to myself, okay, start there. You know, just let's get mm-hmm. through some of these. So, I'm very excited about Filmstruck, and it definitely. The news is always very interesting because it sort of predicts my future, right? But I'm not actually looking at it. I just hope the apps have gotten a little better. I don't know if they've been pushing the pace on that, but, you know, they were some pretty big technical problems that I hope they've worked out.
I'd say it's improved a little bit. There's a little more stability, but it has a lot of work to be done still. I'm sure they're... Yeah, and Arik, if people don't know, I guess you're an app developer, so you know how these things work pretty well. Is that right?
So I'm probably more critical than most,
which is fine. Mm-hmm. It's an informed opinion, but I agree. I just like the content is so my mind does time out sometimes, and the little things that bother me, like the resume doesn't. I did watch one this week that I'll talk about in a moment, and I had to watch the time stamp when I came back to it, because it would not save it or let me resume. So anybody else have opinions on memory on film?
They're all stone cold masterpieces.
Yeah, you can't get any better than that.
Yeah, the only one from this grouping I haven't seen is Sans Soleil, and that's only because I started watching it, and my wife wanted to see it, so we're just waiting on. That's part of marriage. You wait forever to watch a movie together.
Yeah, I hear that.
I love that movie so much.
It's pretty great.
I love other Chris Markers. I'm sure I'll love this one too, but I'm looking forward to it. You could actually also put. Legitte is also about memory as well. Mm. All right, well, we had our Tuesday short plus feature, so this time it was Superbia by Luca Toth, and then Miss Julie by Alpha, I don't know if I'm going to say this right, should I even try? Should Joburg, correct me, I'm probably wrong. So did anybody else get...
Joburg. I'm not sure.
That makes more sense. Did anybody else watch this cluster of a short called Superbia?
Yeah, I watched Superbia. That was a very interesting animated film, that's for sure.
Not for the kids. Some kids might appreciate that. Did you see it, Scott, or do you have Filmstruck?
No, I do have Filmstruck, but I didn't see the short.
Not so much bad for the kids as confusing for the kids. There's definitely some things about it's a lot about sexual roles or gender roles that play in a community. But there's lots of interesting themes going on in there. But the animation is just so so odd, and it really the women, their breasts ends up being appendages that are like arms, while their arms have been shrunk to nothing, and the men are all useless and enjoying their time, while the women are the hunters. There's lots of gender role reversals, mm-hmm. and some comments on sexual roles in the community. The best is when the a gentleman gives birth to a litter of smaller children through his urethra, which I found to be absolutely fantastic.
That was difficult. Yeah, that was something. Yeah, if I watched this at 14, 15, I would be pretty confused. Looked on Letterboxd after I watched it. There weren't many reviews, and I think I put like Secretion, the film, is what I called it. But there was one review that was just period. it was something. Scott, I think you would find this intriguing. It does speak on gender roles, but you might it takes some reflection, I think, to pick up on that. Go ahead.
Based on the little elements you guys have highlighted, I don't know what it says about your opinion of me that you're like, this is for you, Scott, but I'll take your word on it.
Well, I think you like experimental film, and I do. And it's definitely experimental, and it's definitely very creative. So, and a very creative approach to a very modern, sensitive topic. And then it was paired with Miss Julie, and that's the one I watched this week on Filmstruck, and I had to split it up in about 2 or 3 nights, which is why I was a little annoyed with Filmstruck. But I hadn't seen this before, although I know about the play. I haven't seen any of the remakes remakes are really different adaptations, but I thought it was good. I think that the reason they paired these, they said it was because of the visual style. And while I would say that there was an interesting visual style with Miss Julie, I don't think it really matches up with Superbia. I don't think anything I've ever seen can compare to Superbia. But have you guys seen Miss Julie?
It's been a while. I don't remember it being exceptional, but
I've only seen the Spielberg film that Bergman wrote, which I also thought was not exceptional.
Yeah, most of these shorts in a feature, I just watch the short because the feature is somewhere in my shelves, and I know I'll get to it one day.
Yeah, well, this was my first time, and I doubt if Miss Julie will come on the main line. Although you never know.
But it already is.
It is.
I guess I meant Blu-ray, but is on DVD upgrade. Yeah, I guess it's everything's possible. Yeah, it was okay. It was. If people know the play, it's just a 3-person play in somebody's kitchen, well, in a kitchen. And this time, I think this adaptation was a little more, took a little more license with flashbacks, and I think that's where the visual style came in, and that with the flashbacks, somebody would be talking in the kitchen, and then you'd see elements transposed in the frame, which I thought was well done, but yeah, I've seen plenty of great visual movies, so maybe it takes more to impress me. But yeah, I thought it was pretty good. So okay, well, we had the Friday double feature, and this and I have to preface this by some people called me out a couple weeks ago for I said The Wind That Shakes the Barley was coming, and then I kind of said I shouldn't have said that. That was because there was a Filmstruck list that was leaked, and I found that it's since been deleted. So I knew it was coming on Filmstruck, and that's what I meant. I don't know if it's going to come out on the collection. I hope so, but it was paired for St. Patrick's Day with Odd Man Out. So, Arik, do you have any St. Pat's thoughts for these two?
I'm not a huge fan of Odd Man Out, to be honest with you.
Oh,
yeah, I know. I like Carol Reed a lot. You know, Third Man, incredible, blah blah blah. But yeah, Odd Man Out didn't grab me. So maybe I'll let someone else wax poetic.
Scott, do you have any poetry?
no poetry. I mean, I saw it 6-7 years ago, but at the time there was still this kind of meme going around, this common thought that, you know, Carol Reed had been in some way assisted in the directing of The Third Man because it was just like too Orson Welles-y. But I think if you see Odd Man Out, there's a lot of Third Man in there.
Sure.
And I think it's not quite equally as thrilling or equally as masterful, but I think it's a really good time at the movies.
I'd say a different type of masterful. I think the way they integrate the performance and the score and the visuals was independently well done, but yeah, it's not as thrilling as Odd Man Out. It's a little it's a slower thriller. And then Travis, have you got any thoughts on either?
Well, I mean, if we're going to talk poetry and the Irish, shouldn't we be talking about limericks?
Go for it.
But no. Well, there once was a man from Nantucket. No, we shouldn't go there. I have never seen Odd Man Out. That's one of the Carol Reeds I haven't seen. You know, I've seen Fallen Idol and obviously Third Man. So I have been looking forward to that. I picked it up on Blu-ray, I think, at the last sale. So that's on my list. And then I remember from way back when The Wind That Shakes the Barley came out, it was put on my radar and I just never got around to it. But both of these features are also in the IRA section of the Criterion Channel, which is a whole slew of history of the IRA through cinema, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, Hunger too. It is an interesting pairing. Obviously, they're both Irish, and so that's the big part. So, sure, yeah, St. Paddy's Day. Let's celebrate with some some IRA violence. I saw The Wind That Shakes the Barley when it came out, and I forget it. Did it win Cannes? I think it did. So it had a lot of hype. No, because he just won Cannes again. I don't think it did, but I think it had a lot of festival hype. So sometimes hype is a dangerous thing. So I watched it with my expectations too high, and I liked it, but I was a little disappointed just because I expected it to be a masterpiece. And not that it wasn't, but I didn't watch it again for St. Pat's. I would, if it came out on disc, I think that would be a welcome release. Has anybody else seen The Wind? I guess not. All right, well, we're almost done here. So there was a new digital spine, which is Hoop Dreams, which I think is one of the best. Actually, I'm going to say this is hyperbole, but I'll say it's the best sports documentary that I've seen. It's my favorite. Thoughts on Hoop Dreams?
I've shamefully never seen it, so maybe this will be my opportunity.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. Yeah, I haven't seen it in a very long time, since like around the time it came out, but it is great.
Yeah, this is one that's also I have not checked out. My sisters who don't watch movies own this movie on Criterion, which just put me to shame for so long. But I get back at them by taking pictures of myself at sporting events that I don't care about, and then sending pictures of me on the field. So it all equals out in the end.
Okay. Yeah. No. It is really for a Verite documentary with just a guy watching a couple potential basketball stars. It really has a lot of narrative, really quite a story. So I do recommend checking it out. I think I've seen it 3 times over the years. So I try to space it out a good bit. And then the last thing, and I don't really have anything here, and I don't know if you guys do either, but Split Screen Season 3 came out on the Criterion Channel, and they all look like something I might be into, but I haven't just had the time to just sit down and watch any of these episodes. So anybody?
I've finished all of Split Screen Season 1, and I remember when it was on IFC back in the early days. I haven't seen the lineup for Season 3 yet, but, you know, it's interesting. Following indie directors around their kind of hometown and talking about their methodology behind what films they make and what films they like. So it's nice conversations. They're brief. Basically, Split Screen is what was the precursor to what podcasts are nowadays. It's just, you know, quick conversations with people about their work. It's been pretty fun.
Hey, that's an idea. You could quote watch it as a podcast. Just turn it on and, you know, do laundry or something. So
that's what I do with them.
Actually, that's a good idea. So, all right, well, that's it. And there wasn't enough for speed rounds. So you guys, I know you don't like spontaneity, Scott, so you're welcome.
Oh, I was looking forward to the speed round, in fact. Maybe next time.
Yeah, there'll definitely be a next time. So, all right, well, we kind of talked about what we've been doing not the beginning, but almost to the middle. So I'll just throw it out there. Does anybody want to talk about anything you've been doing that we didn't mention? Okay, we've covered it. Well, I'll just mention that I've been doing the Devivier episodes, so I don't know when we're going to record the next one, but so it might be a few weeks before they start coming out, but I think people will enjoy them. So let's get to the legendary piece of flair. So, Arik, I think I know where you're going.
Well, I just wanted to say that after I saw Burden of Dreams, I discovered that there was a documentary that Herzog had made in Germany entirely about his relationship with Kinski, and it's called My Best Fiend. And because I still subscribe to Netflix discs, I was able to have it sent to my house, and I watched it, and oh man, that's awesome. I highly recommend anyone who wants to. I mean, yes, I agree with your point earlier that it's highly likely to me that Herzog is the one framing the narrative about Kinski, and so some of it is maybe a little suspect, but oh wow, there are some great stories. What a crazy person Klaus Kinski seems to have been.
I love this documentary. I'm glad that you watched it. And in fact, I it's been a while since I've seen either that or Burden of Dreams, so sometimes I can't remember which one said what, but yeah, you could do 10 movies about that relationship and I would just eat up each one of them. It's great.
So, Eric, do you speak German?
Who, me? No, but my wife does very well.
Okay. Because I was just going to say that in addition, like watching it, I mean, it's obviously subtitled, mm-hmm. but some of the subtitles are odd. And I found the difference between what Herzog was saying and what the subtitle was saying was also really interesting. So I just, you know, something to keep in mind.
Cool. Yeah. A lot of times, like when they have German voices and they don't subtitle those, like if it's a French film with German, I'll pause it and say, what'd he say? What'd he say? So yeah, maybe
it's useful to have some.
it's this, we're due to revisit this. I wish this would come out on Criterion. I don't know who has the rights, but that would be a great experiment. Scott, you have a piece of flair?
Yeah, I have two. I'll go real quickly. The first is that the annual kind of Noir City Film Festival going out at the end of the month here in Los Angeles. So for any Los Angeles listeners, I highly recommend you check that out. They show a lot of very rare film noirs, some that's not on DVD, and I always find a discovery or two during the course of the festival that were really exceptional. The other thing that I'll spotlight for anyone is I've been trying to watch more kind of non-Bergman Swedish films. So I watched Mae Zetterling's The Girls from 1968. It has B.B. Anderson and Harriet Anderson as two of the stars, but it's a really, really good avant-garde feminist film that's really potent and angry and very viscerally exciting. And I really highly recommend people to check it out. It's out of print on DVD, but you can actually buy it for like $6, use it on Amazon. So I recommend people give it a shot.
Very cool. And are you going to TCM Fest this year? I know that's...
I am, yeah. I thought about mentioning that as well, but it's super expensive if you can't get press credentials, but I am looking forward to that as well.
It's probably too late, but I know that we're running... Well, actually, we're not running that long, but have you planned out what you're going to see yet, or are you still working on that?
Not yet. The other thing I've been up to is getting a new job, so I'm kind of working out balancing the new job with the TCM Fest. And they haven't actually released their schedule, so when they do that, I'll start to figure that out.
Really? Wow. I think it's only in 2 or 3 weeks, but they need to get on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely a priority, is employment first.
Yeah.
All right, Travis, do you have something?
Yeah, I want to kind of shine a little light on a local movie theater here in the Massachusetts area called the Somerville Theater. I'm down in the Cambridge, Somerville, Arlington area, and so whenever we talk about movies around here, we talk about the Brattle, which is, you know, mm-hmm. the home to Janus Films originally. But the Somerville Theater, it's been around for over 100 years, and they do fantastic repertory work. And right now they're doing a political, non-political repertory series that included the films Gaslight, A Face in the Crowd, Downfall, which was The Last Days of Hitler, and then coming up V for Vendetta. So, you know, as they said, we're not political, but you can connect the dots. And they're really great. The projectionist comes down, talks, gives a little history about every film. Not only that, but they also do a 70 millimeter series in the summer times. I got to see a lot of great movies there last year, including got to see The Wild Bunch for the first time up on the big screen in 70. Nice. And got to see Sleeping Beauty, one of the rare Disney 70 millimeter films. That and Tron were, I think, the only two they released in that format. And they were just absolutely gorgeous. And then they also do silent movies on Sundays, every once a month, with a live piano accompanist, Jeff Raspis. I've been going to a lot of older movies lately. I haven't seen a new movie in theaters forever. But, you know, just going to this, having a community that supports that kind of filmmaking, and just showing these movies, showing older films on 35, on 70, as much as possible. It is heavenly for me. And the theater's gorgeous. Big red curtain opens up. I think my children, whenever I take them with me, you know, when the lights dim down, my daughter goes, "This is my favorite part." And then the curtain opens up and then the projector turns on. And then we watch some fantastic Buster Keaton movie with a live piano. And so if you're ever in the area and you're in Somerville or Arlington area in Massachusetts, I highly recommend the Somerville Theater. They know what they're doing there, and they take good care of their films. So
cool.
That's my piece of flair.
Yeah, the Brattle gets talked about a lot, but yeah, that's neat to. It sounds like Boston has a pretty good film community, and you tend to think of it like New York and LA as the film communities, maybe Toronto, but it seems like it's right up there.
Yeah, they've got some good. I mean, but the Harvard Film Archive shows really oddball selections that aren't seen very often. And then you also have the Coolidge Corner, which also does a great repertory runs. And then you have the Brattle, and then the MFA, the Massachusetts the Museum of Fine Arts. They always, I think, they do an annual Kubrick repertory where they do, I mean, they do his whole filmography, 35, and it's absolutely awesome to see.
Yeah, I prefer Bergman.
Kubrick is overrated.
Yeah,
they're both overrated.
Nah, only Kubrick. but I do like. Don't send me hate mail. I'm a big fan of Kubrick. So my piece of flair is The Devils, which I think is just a phenomenal movie. But it's criminally been banned basically in the States for a long, long time. But it's now streaming on Shudder, which is this horror service. You can get it, I think it's shudder.com. You can also get it through Amazon. They have one of those little channel ads for a few bucks. So, but I didn't see The Devils there. Maybe it takes a while to feed. And that's interesting because Warner's has basically said that they will never release it because it's so morally wrong. But somebody released it. It's out. And there was confusion about the running time. And I follow and sometimes speak with Lizzie Tribble Russell, his widow. And she's been part of some restoration screenings around the States and UK. And she said that at first it looked like it was the U.S. cut, which was cut a little bit, had some scenes deleted. But then it looks like it actually is the UK cut that was used for the BFI DVD, which came out, I think, in 2012, which is interesting because you'd think they would do Blu-ray, but no, the Warners would only let them do DVD. So, yeah, it's crazy. So it's the most uncut you can really get in any release, but it doesn't have a couple of famously provocative scenes. Really, the movie is not that bad. It's not as bad as, like, Sallow and bad in the controversial sense. I thought it was pretty benign, but it's religiously controversial, which is not a good thing for the Southeast here. So, all right, guys. Well, thanks for joining me for this show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. It was great.
You made my first time very gentle and soothing. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and thanks, Arik, for joining, even though it was a little late. I was glad to have you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Arik, where can people find you online?
I'm on Twitter at Daniel Tiger for me, at Cinema Gadfly for my movie stuff, at Jazz History Pod for the Jazz History Podcast. Yeah, that's probably the best place to start.
All right, Scott?
On Twitter at Rail of Tomorrow and at BattleshipPretension.com and CriterionCast.com.
And Travis, where are you at?
Oh, I don't really have anything. You can find me on Facebook, Haunting the Gyre, where I lob insults at people every once in a while. But it's all in good fun. We have a good time there.
We do. And I'm AWest505 on Twitter. The show is Criterion_now, which probably is not, I'm not doing as much tweeting as I should. But we're on the Criterion Cast master feed and on that Twitter handle. And please subscribe to that feed. Listen to all the great shows there and in the Facebook page and the groups, although not the Gyre, because, or the Gyre, because Travis is very, very strict on who he lets in.
You can apply, but you better have some credentials.
All right, guys. Thanks again. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Take care. Thank you.